Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Scholarly Peers. This is a brand new episode, part of our second season, where I interview senior academics, journal editors, experienced reviewers about their narratives on journal peer review. And this week, I'm very, very happy to have Professor Masatoshi Sato here with us. Welcome, Masatoshi.
Thank you very much, Simon. I'm excited to be here, especially for this topic that is kind of like secret in our profession. So I'm excited to talk with you.
Thank you. And as some of you may know, Masatoshi is very experienced in journal peer review. He's the editor of the journal Language Awareness. He's edited a bunch of handbooks, encyclopedias, books, and of course, he has been a very experienced journal peer reviewer and author as well. So very happy to have Masatoshi with us. Masatoshi, would you mind briefly introducing yourself and maybe in particular your experience in journal peer review to our listeners?
Sure. I checked my folders. That's the first thing I did when I saw this question related to my experience with peer reviews. And I went back to my PhD time. And I found out that during my PhD, I reviewed only two papers, and both of them were from my supervisor. So journals asked him to review papers, and he asked me to get my opinions on those papers. And so that's what I did as a student. And after that, so I've been doing this, working for this university in Chile for the past 11 years. And during that time, I've been reviewing a lot of papers. When I checked the files, I was reviewing like 20-ish, more than 20 papers every year for the first 5 years of my career. So that's the experience as a reviewer, and you know, like once you review more, you get more requests. That's how it works. Like they think that the editors think that, oh, okay, this guy is happy to review papers, so let's send another one to him. And I get review requests almost every single day, I would say, at this point. And as an editor, as you said, Simon, I have edited volumes, special issues of journals and books, handbooks, etc. And as I'm a journal editor of a journal called Language Awareness from Dell and Francis, and I'm the sole editor, so I'm in charge of all the reviewing processes of submitted manuscripts. So those are my experiences as a reviewer and an editor.
Thank you. So let's dive into your different identities because you wear a number of hats, obviously. So let's start with your experience as an author. And I wonder if you can share with our listeners some of your unforgettable peer review experiences as an author. And I said this to all of my guests, so I will leave it up to you how to interpret the word unforgettable. Some people tend to think it's positive, or some people think it's more negative. So it's entirely up to you.
It's okay. Let me start with negatives, right? Because that's usually experience people have with peer reviewing processes. Negative experiences can be divided into two types, one, time, and two, the content. So in terms of time, my record, or their record, I must say, is a little over 3 years for peer reviewing processes. Wow. I'm not going to name the name, but this was with a top journal in our field, and I submitted my paper and waited for the first round of reviews, maybe 6 months, and submitted a revision fairly quickly in a few days or so. Waiting another year and another round, waiting another year, And at the end, it took more than 3 years. So that's, I will not forget it. And in terms of contents, I've been fortunate not to have, R2, reviewer 2, quotation marks. I'm sure some other editors have talked about it. So there's even a Facebook group of reviewer 2, and I guess the definition is that reviewer 2 is kind of inhumane, nasty, nonsense comments that they put just to reject a manuscript. But fortunately, I have not had any kind of personal nasty comments from the author's perspective. So those are two negative things that could happen during peer review processes. And I want to point out that there can be some positive experiences as well. And I remember that. Okay, two things. So the first positive experience was just the editor being on the reviewing processes. When this happens, general editor is on the process of reviews so that the authors can understand and use the review comments more effectively. And there was one particular paper that I published from. Well, I think I can say it's a positive thing. From Language Learning, which is a top journal in our field. And back then the editor was Pavel Trofimovich. And he's just crazy. I don't know how he does it. He reads all the manuscripts, he reads all the review comments, and he navigates the authors in that like by summarizing main points of the reviews. And as an editor, he has his own directions as well for the journal. So he highlights, okay, this is important, this is less important. And at the end of the day, the person who decides whether the revision is good is the editor. So it's important that editors give some directions for the authors when revising their manuscripts. And that's the model I try to follow as the editor too. So that's a positive experience. Another positive experience is when reviewers say good things about the revisions. That happens as well. So you revise your paper and you write response letters, and sometimes the original reviewer who happened to review the second round of reviews, like revised version, and the reviewer says the author did a good job and answered the questions, and this change makes sense, like I applaud the changes and efforts and et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of thing can, boost up your confidence. And as a writer, you want to have some positive feedback, which you usually don't get during peer review processes.
Yeah, I think you cover basically every phase of that peer review cycle. Thinking about the roles of editors, peer reviewers, comments, attitude, time, and everything. So I think it's a very comprehensive overview. I do hope that 3 year period so resulted in an acceptance. I hope it's
Yeah, well, yes, it was.
okay.
At the end, it was accepted. It was,
Okay.
yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
Okay.
it would have been very bad if it
Yeah,
was
yeah.
rejected at the end. But I have heard similar stories, though. But at the end, the paper was rejected. That happens
Oh
too.
no. Okay. All right. Thanks. So let's move on to talk about your other two roles as peer reviewer and of course a journal editor. I wonder if you have any unforgettable experiences.
Well, so unforgettable, as you said, it's kind of difficult to define. So I think one of the things that concern me with that, okay, let me go back. So as a journal editor, right? I receive manuscripts every day and I read them. And then I decide whether or not I'm going to send this manuscript to external reviews. So this process, which is called, well, in different ways, but like in-house decision. So in-house, as in-house of the journal, decision that editors make. So when I do that, I look at the content of the study, of course. But I also look at the writing quality as well. And I have to say, when there's no good writing, if the quality of writing is low, it is difficult to send this manuscript to external reviewers because they will have the same issue. They will have the same issue with the language. How the study is presented, how the study's results are communicated matters a lot because, like you wouldn't understand what the study was about if the writing is not there. So that's one thing that I always face every day. Another, well, maybe this is unforgettable. So as a journal editor, I look at the revised versions, I look at response letter, I look at original reviewers' comments, and how the reviewers, I'm sorry, how the author responded to the review comments. And there was one case that the study was strong, but the author wrote a response letter explicitly criticizing the reviewer. And it's just. So I decided not to send the revised version to the original reviewer because. Well, I think I kind of saved the manuscript as an editor because otherwise the reviewer, original reviewer, would think that, okay, so this person is attacking me. So that was an interesting experience to me. Like, why would you fight? Why would you criticize the reviewer when this reviewer spent extra time and effort to read your paper and write comments? And the reviewers' comments were not personal. It was they were fine. They were critical, but they were constructive. But the author decided to take it personally and decided to attack the reviewer. So that was an interesting experience to me.
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting because I've heard a lot of stories about reviewers attacking the authors because they are the people with power in that particular situation. But that's like a first, I think, for me to hear, especially the comments are not that personal and nasty. But obviously from your experience, what I learn is that looking at the role of editors, because a lot of people they think, editing simple, easy, you have all the power, you just decide and assign people to manuscript and make a decision at the end. It's straightforward, easy job. But it's not,
That's
because
not.
there are so many things to navigate and complexities and politics and everything. So it's good that you shared your experiences. Before we move on to the next part about supporting early career researchers and PhD students in journal peer review, I have this one additional question, Masatoshi, that I'm sure you can answer me because you have edited different genres. So you've edited journals, you have edited handbooks, you've edited encyclopedias, you've edited special issues. I wonder, you're editor of different things, right? I wonder if the role feels slightly different to you, or you think it's basically, you're doing the same thing for different people.
My short answer would be yes. I act differently depending on the types of research publications that I am editing. Apparently encyclopedias are different because it's just a short entry of papers written by very experienced, knowledgeable researchers. So I tend to focus on more like superficial issues when I review those papers instead of content. I trust those contributors. I trust their writing styles. I trust their knowledge, whatever they say in their entries. But when it comes to let's compare books, edited volumes, edited books versus special issues. Books, you can publish books, you can edit books however you want. It's not difficult to find a publisher who wants to publish your book. Journal special issues, it's a completely different world. You need to go through peer review process to get your special issue proposal accepted to begin with. And the papers that you edit as guest editors need to meet the standards of the journal, whatever it is that will be publishing your special issue. And it's just a difference in stake, right? So I consider books more like kind of, I can play around and I can do more creative stuff. Mm-hmm. I can let go small things, etc., etc. So there's this positive aspect of freedom in edited volumes. But when it comes to journal papers, they need to adhere more standards of quality, like research quality, writing quality, how the content is organized, etc., etc. And I am more careful and strict for journal papers, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to know, because I think for new researchers in particular, they come across all sorts of invitations, call for papers, you know, for books, book chapters, even sometimes conferences, right? Mm-hmm. So it's good to know the different levels of rigor for different types of publications. So let's move on to talk about early career researchers in journal peer review. And you mentioned at the very beginning, I still remember what you said. You said during your PhD period, you only reviewed two publications. And so that was quite interesting to me. So you were almost saying that there may be an expectation that for PhD students to get some reviewing experience, because strictly speaking, they are researchers in training, afterwards, they graduate, they become an independent researcher. But it seems like from your introduction, there was like this expectation that PhD students may learn something through being a reviewer. I wonder what you think about this, because from what I heard from a lot of PhD researchers, they feel like they are not ready, they're not confident, and they don't know the topic good enough. They have never done it before. They may just have one paper published. Why should somebody ask me to review? What would be your view on this?
So I did not get any training or information about peer reviews. So the first time I was exposed to peer reviewing process was when I was doing my master's, when I did publish some papers, and that was the first time. And I had no idea what's going on, like who, what reviewers do, like why like even the notion of peer reviews, right? Like why is there peer review? And now I know that, you know, the entire scientific community, whatever it is, medicine, engineering, nursing, social works, whatever, it depends on peer reviewing processes, right? But I didn't know that. So I didn't know what to do with it as a student. And as I said earlier, I reviewed a lot of papers as an early career researcher. And in hindsight, this was really invaluable experience because I got to expose to different topics, for example. Well, that's one thing. Because if you're a PhD student, what do you do research-wise is on a really narrow single topic. So you don't get to read different things and you don't get to be exposed to different methods. That's one thing too. By reviewing a lot of manuscripts, you get to know, oh, okay, so people do this kind of stuff. People can use this kind of methods, writing styles as well. People write differently. So the way you write is not the only way you write scientific papers. You get some new ideas too by reviewing manuscripts during the peer reviewing processes. And of course, like you can't steal an idea from the paper you read, but sometimes manuscripts kind of, you know, click your brain and you come up with your own ideas. Mm-hmm. So those things, I think because of those benefits, I personally believe that peer reviewing processes or publication business in general should be included in the PhD training program, because I, you know, most of the PhD students want to become academics, right? And academics, it's a profession. It's like it could be like, you know, lumberjack or plumber or nurse or whatever. It's a profession, and peer reviewing is a big part of this profession simply because publications are important for academics. So I think PhD programs can create training program focusing on peer reviewing processes. And so it's a difficult, having said that though, it's an unpaid work, right? And that's the problem of entire peer reviewing system. Like you need to have pure motivation for advancing science. Otherwise, why would you spend extra time to review somebody else's papers? So if you included this training program in a PhD program, then they get this important idea that we need to support each other. So I think the training program can do different things, like, you know, have students review paper, or you know, involve. Okay, let's say there are two ways I see. So one, have students, PhD students, review the paper and the supervisor makes sure that the review comments are good ones. So that's one training. Another training could be that a supervisor or PhD program director walks through students how peer reviewing happens from the stage of manuscript submission. You can use, you can share your own publication processes too. I would do it, you know, show my original, like a first submission, show them the review comments, show them my response letter, and show them the revised version and another round of reviews, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because it's so mysterious, you know, what's going on and how to get published. Like, they are just told to publish, but how to publish involves passing through the review process.
I think there are a lot of interesting ideas here. I've been talking to different editors, and they certainly have different views about whether a structured program or structured support is useful, because their argument would be, because that's what they experienced. They didn't have any training, like what you said, but they turn out just fine. You know, they learned it. You know, people say learning by doing. So when I started, I didn't know what happened, but as I do more and more, I get to know, you know, what's best and what I should do. So why should there be a need for like an institutional level kind of intervention? But I'm so glad that you mentioned, you know, the kind of missing piece in a lot of PhD programs. And I agree with what you said, that it's part of acculturation process, right? Because students are inducted into the scientific community.
Yes.
I wonder, yeah, what's...
it's one type of professional skill.
Exactly. I wonder what kinds of... You mentioned about having students maybe peer reviewing each other's papers and more experienced academics sharing their experience. I wonder what other skills you think PhD students would need to navigate journal peer review.
Skills?
Yeah, or knowledge. So you mentioned about, for example, knowing a little bit more about the flow, right? Different milestones, different steps. That's the technical aspect, of course. Maybe another aspect you mentioned is to give feedback, what's good feedback to each other. But what other skills do you think they need? For example, are you opposed to the idea that having students review for journals?
Okay. I am not. Okay. I am not. So I think... So they will... PhD students, once they become professors, they will serve as both an author and a reviewer, right? And they take different roles, and they, of course, come with different skills. For becoming a good reviewer, I think, of course, they need a training for how to review, right? Mm-hmm. Like where to look at, like do you, like how to structure the review document itself, mm-hmm. would be helpful. Like, you know,
yeah.
Do you start with summarizing, mm-hmm. the study? You know, do you create different sections for different sections in the paper? Like, okay, so this is a method paper, method section, so you focus on methodological issues. Do you comment on formalistic errors? How would you give constructive comments while not missing the point that you're trying to make, etc., etc.? Those are skills, but as a reviewer, but I think what would be even more helpful for PhD students is to develop skills for responding to review comments. Yeah. So one thing would be how to write response letter.
Yeah.
Right. I just needed to learn how to do it by myself.
Yeah.
And another thing would be how to write a cover letter. You know, some editors, so there's like this group of editors in our field, and we have a mailing list, and I think 25, 30 journals belong to this group. So we exchange ideas and issues related to editorial processes, one of which was, you know, do you even care if there's cover letter or not? And people or different editors share different opinions. Like, some of them didn't care. I do care. Sometimes cover letters help me understand the background of the study, for example, if it's a part of larger study or whether it was rejected by another journal and went through peer reviewing processes. Those pieces of information can be included in cover letter, and it helps the editor to make better decisions to navigate peer reviewing processes. So those skills can be easily taught. To me, it's a professional skill, how to navigate peer reviewing processes, such as, I don't know, like how to write conference abstracts or like what we do every day, basically. How to write grant proposal. Like, I was never trained to do those things, but these are daily tasks that professors deal with, researchers deal with. So I would advocate that PhD programs create like one semester of professional skills. That would set PhD students so much better when they graduate. Because if there's nothing like that, then yes, you get doctorate. But, and then you know a lot about one small thing, but that's it. Like, once you become an assistant professor, then you need to learn those skills hard ways because you are not trained to do it.
That's so true, and I think you're so right when you say that these are like workplace skills that PhD students need, and just like any profession, like nurses, teachers, they have placement, right? So they place the trainees in the real context, and I think having that peer review experience, reviewing for journals, is like a placement kind of exercise for PhD students, right? So it's quite valuable. Masatoshi, before we close, I have to ask you this question. This is just tailored for you, because I remember you shared an experience submitting an article to a publisher, which charges for publication, and they promise a very swift and high quality peer review process. I think it's a Frontier. I think that's fine to tell people the name. I wonder if you can share with us a little bit about that very unique experience, because people have been thinking about where to publish, and as you said at the beginning, time is a factor. And when they say swift, that people are drawn to it. Can you share a little bit?
Great and not great, I would say. So I understand their business model, and I support the intention because their business model is based on the negative sides of peer reviewing processes that we just talked about, like such as unpaid work and it takes time and et cetera, et cetera. So I was asked to edit, what do they call? I think they call it a section. Pretty much the same as special issue in journals. And then I said no, because it's just too much of money making atmosphere going on. Like, you need to pay, how much was that? US$3,000, I think, to get published. And the reviewing process was really quick, which is a great part. But I must say the review comments were not as helpful as other comments that I have gotten from regular other top journals. So yes, you can get your paper published more easily, more quickly, which is great. But if the entire point of peer reviewing processes is to make sure that only the quality research goes out to the world, then this business model is not serving its purpose. And review was not paid here too. So they're making money by charging authors to publish, but they're not rewarding reviewers for reviewing papers. What they do is they send requests to potential reviewers. They wait 3 days and then they remove this potential reviewer and move on to the next one. So they have this entire database, some sort of system that is automatic. So it goes to another reviewer, another reviewer, another reviewer until somebody says yes. And I think they asked for 2 weeks or something. So in this model, what happens is that people who are knowledgeable of the topic say no. And the system goes to next group of reviewers who may not be as qualified as the original reviewers. That's what happens.
Okay. That's a very interesting experience. Of course, we're not here to comment on the model, but I mean it's a rare experience that the PhD students would have. I mean, because they don't have the budget, obviously, it's expensive. But it's a very, very interesting experience thinking about speed and quality of peer review. Can they coexist, right? In a perfect
That's
world,
it.
maybe they can.
That's
To
it.
round off our discussion and conversation, Masatoshi, I wonder if you have some advice for PhD students, early career researchers, or maybe newly minted assistant professors listening when it comes to journal peer review.
Sure. It's kind of difficult to separate advice related to writing good papers and doing or anticipating or being ready for review processes because good papers get published more than bad papers, right? But I would say the first advice would be that when you write a manuscript, think about what reviewers might say on your paper. And if you can think of any critical comments, then fix it before submitting it. That's better. And another set of advice would be something that I said, which is to work on response letter. Do not underestimate the value of response letter. Reviewers read response letter if they happen to look at the revised version. Work on the cover letter, as I said. Another thing, well, this is minor maybe, but this is not minor to me, which is to make sure that the formatting is good. So nowadays journals have free format policies, so you don't have to follow APA no longer. In the past, like I am from a generation where when I needed to follow APA closely, print out 3 copies of manuscripts, put them in an envelope, and send them to the publisher's house. That's what I did for my PhD publication. And when I receive those papers that do not follow the formatting requirements, I would. It's just an impression thing, right? It's impressionistically not good. Like looking at reference lists, somebody can't do APA. How would I expect that this person would be very careful in writing for this author would be able to create visually attractive and informative figure, for example. So I would advise that students be careful on those formalistic aspects as well. And what else can I say? Don't give up. You get rejected all the time. I get rejected all the time. So if you get rejected, or if your paper is rejected, incorporate the feedback and try another journal. Don't take review comments personally. That's important. I think that's the most important for revising according to peer review feedback, which is to listen. You need to understand that different people have different opinions. And if, for example, some part of your paper was not clear according to the reviewer, most likely other people will find it unclear as well. So no matter how confident you are, listen to the review comments and incorporate them. Sometimes you need to stand up and say, I don't want to change it. I don't want to change this part. When you do that, explain your decision logically. Most of the reviewers say, oh, okay, that makes sense. So I think the overall advice for getting published basically is to respect the reviewer comments.
I think it's, these are wise words. And I think especially the last point about not giving up, and because people share success stories everywhere, right? But they rarely share failures, which is understandable. But then we have to normalize, not failures, but I mean process of getting published, right? Because that's rejection is a process to getting published. And I like what you said, that it's not you who are rejected. It's the paper, the work. That, because sometimes I think it's difficult to detach from the publication because you spend so much time on your work, and it becomes part of your identity, because when people talk about this topic, you are kind of associated with it, right? So
it's not easy. Like when I get review comments that are to me nonsensical, first thing I do is to swear, of course, and then take a deep breath. And then tell myself, okay, if this was a problem, it could be a problem for other readers too. And then change my attitude and revise. Yeah. That's what I do.
Yeah, humility, it's important as well. So, yeah, thank you, Masatoshi. I think it's great that you share your experience being so transparent and generous. I know you're extremely busy. Thank you for taking the time to share some tips with PhD students. It's very
nice. Thank you very much, Simon. I had fun. Thank you.
Thank you.